Thought for today. I am a success in life as I feel myself worthwhile. I am a success in life as I feel myself worthwhile. I am a success in life as I feel myself worthwhile. Love, our little miniature pincher, has a tendency to be coward. That doesn't mean a coward, but to not feel worthwhile, not feel that he is important. And he comes in with his ears back and his head down, trying to be so humble, so to make us feel that he's not worth anything. And then I play with him for a second, and then I'll take my fist and I'll point it at him, and I'll shake him up. And up goes his ears, and up goes his tail, and he's just full of enthusiasm, full of worthwhileness. He believes in himself. Now, why is it that he goes around here acting like he doesn't believe in himself? And he does. That is, he goes around here acting like he doesn't believe in himself. What are we doing to him to cause him to feel inferior? What are we doing to him to cause him to feel that he's not worthwhile? You see, when he lays back his ears, he wants to be submissive. He wants to submit himself to us, and he wants to submit himself because he thinks that we want to manipulate and control him. Well, we do want to control him. We do want to manipulate him, but we want to do it in a beautiful, gentle, loving way. We want to always be in charge of how we manipulate him and how we control him. We do not want to make him feel submissive or inferior. Now, when children are made to feel submissive, what we say we are doing is we are killing their spirit. And we don't want to do this with little love. But somehow we're killing his spirit. Why are we killing his spirit? Why is his spirit being dominated? Why is he feeling less important? Well, that remains to be seen. We're not with him 24 hours of the day, so we don't know what sort of a submissive role he's been playing. And of course, Button may be dominant over him, and that may make him feel submissive. Ellen may be dominant over him and make him feel submissive. Perhaps when Ellen takes him for a walk, Ellen is constantly jerking on his leash and saying, "Walk with me and do this and do that and do this," and until he feels very submissive. Now, when he walked with me, from my own experience, he would walk right next to me, and his ears would be up, and he'd be checking everything out, and he'd be looking around. And when I let him have the lead in the early days, when I let him have a long line, he was out in front. He was leading Button, and Button was checking here and checking there, but he was out looking for things for Button to check in. And he was sort of like the lead dog. And he is a lead dog. He is very good. Now, what has Ellen been doing to him to make him feel so submissive? This is something we have to come to terms with. Is Ellen feeling submissive herself? Is she feeling not worthwhile? Is she in any way projecting her feelings to the dog? Well, a dog is a reflection of its master. And right now, Ellen is the master of both Button and Love. And she is the one who determines what they do, how they do it, how they act, how they sit, how they stand, how they eat, and so forth. And they seem very happy with her presence, very happy with her direction. So it has to be something else. It has to be that Ellen does not feel very worthwhile herself. Now, none of us in our right minds could ever say that Ellen doesn't feel worthwhile. But yet, there must be something there, because nothing happens by chance. Everything has a cause. Now, what is the cause of little Love feeling so submissive, feeling not worthwhile? I am a success in life as I feel myself worthwhile. Are you a success in life? Is Ellen being a success in life? Is she feeling frustrated because she cannot get her satellite to working properly? Does she feel frustrated because she does not get her internet working going property, that she'll feel frustrated because she doesn't. You see, all of these things, they're subtle to us. But our pets pick that right up, and they pick it up very fast. So, from this day forward, Ellen, I forbid you to be frustrated again.
Thank you.
Now, if the rest of you want that too, I'll include all of you. But I forbid you to be frustrated again. I forbid you to ever feel unworthy of anything. I forbid you to feel that there's somebody else in the world who can do things better than you can, even Daniel, even Sylvia. I forbid you to feel that you are not as worthy as those two people who know what they're doing. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I expect to see a gigantic, remarkable change in Mr. Love. I expect him to be walking around with his tail up and his ears up and wiggling his tail as a dominant, powerful young man, knowing where he stands in life. Now, can you handle that?
Yes.
And you walk around with your tail up and your ears up like a dominant, successful young lady?
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, really, that tail up bit has a little bit to do with it. Have you ever seen these women who are models and they model clothing and they have a certain sachet or swagger to themselves, and the men models too, and they act as though their little derriere has to wiggle as they walk because it adds a little bit of imagination to their demonstration of the clothing or whatever they're doing. Interesting, huh? So it's very interesting. Now, along that same line, this morning, my internet had not been working right. My satellite had not been working right. And we finally got it all organized. And up came 75 emails. And three of them were from people I wanted to know about. And all the rest of them were hot night in Las Vegas. You wear your shirt, you know, that's all, when you're up. But anyone can get up and dance, and that, and that. And I keep saying, you know, delete, delete. And I go to the bottom, and then I say,
unsubscribe.
Huh? Unsubscribe. But Daniel tells me, and Mr. Modem tells me, and a number of other people tell me, don't do that. Because if you unsubscribe, then they know they have a live one. They know they have a live email address that actually gets through to somebody. And they might just be able to, by showing you enough smut, make you feel that it's interesting. And, you know, it's like the ministers who are on the committee to check pornographic movies. And so only certain ministers are chosen to be on that one, the ones who want to. And so these same ministers are on that committee, and every day they watch two or three pornographic movies to see if they're pornographic. They see them from beginning to end. And then tomorrow they'll watch two more. Now, you can be sure that familiarity will not breed contempt in them, but next thing you know, they'll be going to those places and doing those things, because you cannot put that into your consciousness without having some results. I see something and it says, not pornographic, but it says indiscreet. And so, well, in fact, on my computer, I was noticing today, it said, you cannot look at this. You have said that you don't want to see it. And so I can't pull it up, which I wasn't going to do anyhow, but it says, you cannot look at this. I brought it forward so that I could see what the streamer was, and then I took the X and crossed it out. But before the X came, another thing came from my computer which said, you cannot look at this. You've already said you don't want to see anything that is X-rated or anything of this type of thing. And I thought, well, that's good. That's good. I don't have to bother investigating it to see whether I want to see it or not. Now, why would you ever want to see something that you don't want to see? Why would you ever call up something that you know is flagrantly contrary to your lifestyle? Now, I have nothing against Las Vegas as something that some people like. But for me personally, I would never put even a nickel in a slot machine because I have no interest in it. I went to the shows in Las Vegas when I was in real estate, and one of my clients invited me to go along with his bowling group to Las Vegas and to see the shows and to do all these things. Well, we had our dinner as we were watching these interesting shows, topless, bottomless, and everything else under the sun. And at that time, I thought, that's very interesting. I have absolutely no desire to go back there. I have absolutely no desire to see them again. What did I see in these shows? The naked body wasn't a bad thing, but it was how it was gestured. What was the bad thing of these shows? What was the bad thing of these shows for me was the bad language. The disrespect that the comic had for his mother and his family, talking about them in negative and smutty ways. And the way that he referred to the audience, and the ugly things, talking about homosexualism, talking about bisexualism, talking about heterosexualism, talking about activities that a married couple might do in the privacy of their home, and talking about all sorts of things, and I don't remember what they all are, I don't want to remember, but it was enough to shake my timber. I'm not a prude, but I am not interested in flagrantly having something thrown in my face that I don't choose to participate in or know about. And so I just have never gone again to a nightclub show there. We were in Las Vegas for the INTA Congress, and we were staying in Harrods, wasn't it? Harrods?
Harrods.
Well, they're moving into downtown San Diego as the 1st of August also. And lovely place, you know, but you walk through 3 billion zillion one-armed bandits on the first floor, and all of the games that they play to help you separate you from your money, and the people just willingly run up there and do things that they don't know anything about it, but they're giving it away. They have no self-integrity. They have no feeling of self-worth. If they would realize that they cannot win all the time, and they cannot win enough to make up their losses, everyone goes there and says, I can afford to lose $50, $100, $1,000, but beyond that, I don't go. And they often do go beyond that. But why should they lose $1,000 if they say, okay, that's my entertainment for the week, or that's my entertainment for the month? But they go there and they invest that money in these casinos, so these casinos can continue with their bawdy floor shows. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm opposing these things. I am just saying, for myself, I have no interest in it. For myself. Many people find them very charming. I know many very snazzy men and women who are high class, you might say, that they just love to go there, and they love to hear these things said. And do you think that they can come back to their families? They can come back to their homes? They can come back to their businesses and not have some of those words slip out now and then? It's an impossibility. I talk to so many men in prison who use very bad language, and they say, pass the butter, and pass the this, and that, and that, and always using these words that are very unhappy, very mother-destructive and mother-belittling. And I think to myself, why do they do that? And then when I counsel with them, I say, you know, you guys, you're going to be going home from prison soon. And when you go home and you say to your kids at the table, they're surrounding the table, Daddy's home, Daddy's home, and then you say, pass the butter. And that's okay. That's okay. But tomorrow, the kids are going to say, pass the butter, and you're going to slap their face. And they're going to say, Daddy, that's what you say. And they say, that's a pop-o-ba-de-boo, you know. You see, you cannot do that. You cannot say anything in your world, in your life, that shows you do not believe in yourself, to show you that you don't consider yourself worthwhile. Every word of our mouth, every idea of our mind, every thought we think, every action we take must be in keeping with the highest that we're capable of. And if we ever lower ourselves to anything less than our highest, I guarantee you, you won't see mastership. You think you're going to see mastership. You think that you're great. You think that you can go around swearing. You can go around using foul language. You can go around using dirty language. You can go around defaming. You know, you've heard, do not take the name of God in vain. You ever heard of that? Mm-hmm. Do not take the name of God in vain. Well, let's start out with God, Mother. Mother is God, right? And the way they use the mother word is taking it in vain. I mean, that is tragic. And calling people names, calling them bisexual, heterosexual, homosexual, calling them anything like that, anything, is taking their name in vain. If a person is a heterosexual person and he or she likes women or men, whichever is their opposite, and they have to let the world know, I am heterosexual. Well, why are you saying that if perhaps you're not quite sure of yourself? If you're quite sure of yourself, you don't have to put any labels on yourself. You are just out picturing in your life, in your world, in yourself, how worthwhile you feel about yourself. No one is ever in doubt of who you are unless you're in doubt of who you are. When you are in doubt of who you are, then you can be sure that the world will be in doubt of you. Now listen to me carefully, and please don't judge me until I'm done saying this paragraph. I like homosexuals. I think they're wonderful people. I have nothing against homosexuals. I think that they're wonderful people. I think homosexuals have a right to be homosexual if they want to. I think homosexuals are... What am I doing? I'm saying to you, you can't be sure, maybe I'm homosexual. You can't be sure because I'm defending them. Heinz is a lousy guy. He's a son of a gun. He's no good. He's not worth the bread he was born with, you know. And when you all feel like defending him, then you have something to worry about in your own household. When you know that Heinz is beyond any word that I have ever uttered, that Heinz is the finest, he has the most integrity, he has the most humility, he has the most of everything that's good, he doesn't need defending. Do you understand that? You don't defend him when I belittle him, because then you enter in the belittlement in an argument. I said something to one of you the other day, and you said, huh, you know, like that. Like, go ahead, talk silly. But you don't have to defend yourself. You know who you are. You know what's going on. Heinz is perhaps one of our most angelic people that we've ever had on campus. Every single person on campus loves him to pieces. And so I would use him as my scapegoat. And I would throw terrible remarks at Heinz. And I'd say, Heinz is no good. Heinz doesn't do this. Heinz doesn't do that. And then everybody would jump on Heinz's bandwagon. You know, you have defenders. And they would say, Bo-bo-ta-bo. And I said, see, if you have to defend an angel, you got a problem. If you have to defend someone who is exquisite, you got a problem. I was at the Kiwanis Club, I believe it was in what was it, the Rotary of Kiwanis? Kiwanis Club in Lugano. And this was many years ago, and President Reagan was at his prime. And as I was there talking to the Kiwanis, and they knew I was an American, they said, what do you think of Ronald Reagan? And I said, he's one of the most outstanding presidents we've ever had. Well, why can you say that? And then I gave a diatribe on why I could say it. Now, I didn't have to do that. But I just spoke about it, and I didn't even know that I liked him. I didn't dislike him, but I did know that he did all these things. And I said, I never thought about it, but he is a great president. He did do these things. But if you guys in any way think he's not a great president, then you just start checking on him. You just start checking to see that, well, he did something about a war. And, you know, he had no wars during his time. But he did something about a war. And I said, what do you mean he? Well, the United Nations. I said, well, that's hardly our president. Every country that has a military is required and belongs to the United Nations must send a percentile of their people to join the United Nations armed forces according to the population of the country. And so we, having the largest population outside of Russia, and they don't send people to the United Nations, but we outside of Russia have the largest number, and so we have the largest contingent present, and so we appear as though it's the United States activity. And I said, if you think that's President Reagan's idea, this thing was set up long before him, long before Ronnie took office. There was something totally different. And it had nothing to do with any president. It had to do with the makers of the United Nations, the creators of it, and how they did it. But you see, I felt worthwhile. I wasn't defending Reagan. I wasn't defending the United Nations. I was just telling what it is. But I wasn't defending it. I said, it doesn't need any defense. It does a great job. It's a wonderful organization. And later, everything that I had said about Reagan came to pass. Everything that I had said he was going to do or was doing or did came to pass. And it became public. And you see, if I were to defend him, that'd be a foolish thing to do because he didn't need defense. I just stated the facts and let it go at that. Now, can you do that? If you defend your husband, your wife, your daughters, your sons, your aunts, your uncles, your mothers, your fathers, if you defend them, then you don't believe in them. Because Jesus taught us that first. He said, what wouldst thou of me? And then he said, anyone want to say what he said? So?
They say.
So they say. When they condemned him and called him a prince who was trying to take over the world and take over and be the king of the Jewish people, he said, so they say. Now, he did not authenticate or eradicate anything. He merely said, so they say. When you can go through life's experiences and feel so worthwhile that you can say, and so they say, and so they say, be untouched, then you, like the Christ, have entered into that high state of consciousness which does not defend itself, which does not even talk about the issue, which just stands up for its own pure self. Now, Jesus didn't defend himself, but he got killed. You know, so, you know, that doesn't speak too well of not defending yourself. But he stood up for what he believed. Is what you believe worth standing up for? Is what you believe worth dying for? Is what you believe worth living for? Do you feel worthwhile about what you believe? What difference would it make under the sun if you died right now?
Nothing.
And it wouldn't make any difference at all. But what difference would it make if you died standing up for what you believed? Jeanne d'Arc stood up for what she believed, didn't she? She said, God told me to lead the army of France and show them to win and freedom. Now, from that point on, there should never have been any discussion. She had no experience. She had no military experience. She had nothing. And yet she led them to victory. But the church said, God's word only comes through the church. And no one else can be a dispenser or receiver of God's word. This is why the saints took so long to be canonized. For instance, women who saw Mary and men who saw Jesus or something like that, they went through their entire life belittled by the church. But after they died, then they were canonized. Interesting, isn't it? The Pope is so slow, but so be it. In any event, when you stand up for what you believe, you will have one of the most fantastic experiences of your life. And you have an opportunity to stand up for what you believe every day, every moment. Now, are you willing to do that? Are you ready to do that now?
Yes.
Are you willing to take the opportunity when it comes to you?
Yes.
We had a dear friend, Millie McGeehan, and she didn't stand up for what she knew and believed. And she came to a terrible end. You see, this is what happens to us when we don't stand up for what we know and believe. We must stand up for what we know and believe. And if we don't, the fall will be mighty and great. And we don't want that. So, let's get our act together. Let's know that we're worthwhile. We do not have to entertain anything in our life that is not worthwhile. You can look at a nudist magazine, there's nothing wrong with that. But to look at a porno magazine, that's another thing, where they're flaunting sexual behavior in a distasteful way. That's a totally different thing. But that, again, is your choice. You can go to the airport, you can get on the airplane, you can buy a porno magazine and read it while you're on the airplane, but don't sit next to somebody that you don't want to see that you love what you're looking at. And then you can throw it, or just leave it on the seat when you leave the plane, and no one will ever know you had it. But is that the kind of life you want to lead? Do you want to lead the kind of life that if someone said Jesus looking over your shoulder, he would find that you were a remarkable person? Or if your mother's looking over your shoulder, you say, well, my mother's just like me. She likes porno stuff. Oh, really? Well, that's okay. But no, I don't think so at all. For any one of you who has a mother, and you all did, she had to be supercalifragilisticexpialidocious to have a child as pure, beautiful, and wonderful as you are. Amen.